Blueberry.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No E's. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Yeah, this is the official fight music anthem. If you see somebody you don't like, tell them stand up.
Hey, I hit them, then I split them, I get them for the dope. Pickpocket a nigga before I lay him across the floor. It's the Rock Town. You motherfuckers lay it down. We pound for pound. Illest niggas out ain't fucking around. This ain't the WCW or the NWO. It's reality. We're casually kicking your dough. Or we can switch to the Mortal Kombat. My niggas will come back, ready for combat. Hostility stealing me, killing these niggas is wrong. But what should I do? Do they tryna take me off my throne? I'll put my foot through the side of your head. Yeah, homies threw in the towel, they decided you dead. Should've decided to flare, but you decided to fight. One hit to the head, knocking out your lights. We can clash clans, or we can clash crews. After we clash your mans, then we gon' clash you.
Hit that, nigga. Kick that, nigga. Talking that shit, better get back, nigga. Whack that, nigga. Crack that, nigga. Pull a gap out.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to yet another edition of the Man Up Podcast. This is episode number 12 coming at you today on Thursday, May 15th, 2008. Of course, as always, I'm your host, Afton Sloan, being joined by my esteemed colleague, the editor and host of the No Gimmicks Needed Podcast, of course, my brother, Shane Sloan. How you doing today?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I mean, you forgot to say that I am the voice of pro wrestling podcasting.
Well, I mean, I did call you my esteemed colleague, man. I thought that was enough.
Well, you know, I mean, I think I need to make it official. You know, I am the America's voice when it comes to professional wrestling podcasting, and if you don't watch out, you know, I think I could surpass you as being the top dog here on this podcast. I mean, your MMA knowledge may be slightly superior to mine, and I do mean ever so slightly, but you know, my most overall vocal quality is what really carries this show, I like to think.
I have no idea about that, you know, so let's just go.
That's just a big load of shit. Man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to dignify that response, so let's just go ahead and move on here. Let's jump right into the news before we get into the Dream 3 review, and we may have enough time to talk about The Ultimate Fighter. We'll have to see. But, excuse me, several news stories to get into here. And of course, the first one is about Andrei Arlovsky, the former UFC heavyweight champion. Josh Gross of SI.com is reporting that Andrei Arlovsky could be headed to Affliction. We should know for sure on May 19th, according to his report. May 19th, of course, the date when Andrei Arlovsky could sign with Affliction. SI.com has learned that is assuming the UFC declines to match what is believed to be a deal that pays the former UFC champion in the low to mid six figures for the first of three non-exclusive bouts. And if he actually signs with Affliction, dude, this is going to set up a match between him and former International Fight League heavyweight champion Ben Rothwell. Wow.
I was waiting for you.
So much you were speechless, man.
I was going to see if you had anything else you wanted to say about it first. But I mean, yeah, I mean it's big news. Nothing that we haven't kind of seen coming already. That's sort of been the rumor and speculation going around for a while now that he was done with the UFC and that he was probably going to go to this Affliction promotion, fight Ben Rothwell, who's a guy that's been, I don't know if he's currently still ranked a top 10 heavyweight, but he's been in the top 10 before. Pretty decent heavyweight fighter, and seeing as the heavyweight division so weak, you know, I think it's an interesting matchup to say the least. So, you know, I'm interested to see what happens with him.
All right, let's talk about this next story here. Of course, it's Kenny Florian. And he may be, he's set to host a new MMA show, dude, on ESPN.com. Kenny Florian is set to host a new MMA news and information show on ESPN.com, according to a report from MMA Weekly. The half-hour show called MMA Live is set to debut tonight at 7 p.m. Of course, if you're listening to this, you've already missed it, so hopefully you people out there know about the show and you go and tune in, because we definitely want to support this. And here's Kenny Florian's thoughts on it. He says, quote, it's kind of a fast-paced show on the current news and events going on in the sport, Florian told MMA Weekly. There's a whole lot of guys at ESPN have been trying to get this done, I guess, for 2 years. It's strictly going to be on ESPN.com. It's not going to be on TV as of right now. Basically, they're going to do a run for 3 shows on ESPN.com and see what the response is, see how it does. Then if it goes well, we'll do a regular thing on the internet, and if it does even better, we'll possibly see it on TV. So definitely, I think, you know, you should tune in, see how it is. You know, if you like it, keep tuning in, and we may see a regular segment on ESPN about MMA. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think so, too. It's good to see that ESPN, you know, the worldwide leader in sports, is starting to pick up on mixed martial arts scene and starting to cover mixed martial arts. You know, kind of your sport. What was you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, I remember back around, like, UFC 75 and the ones that kind of in or around that, they were, like, telecasting the weigh-ins live and stuff on ESPN News. They, you know, they don't really do that anymore, though.
Yeah. I would say that, you know, it's obviously a good thing. You kind of know, you know, your sport's starting to become sort of mainstream in a couple ways. One, if you get a video game, your sport's getting pretty mainstream. Number two, if ESPN's covering you, you know, you're getting pretty mainstream. I think a good example of a sport that had become kind of mainstream but is really not caught on to huge success is like the Arena Football League, you know, and arena football in general. They got started getting, you know, UFC, or no, excuse me, not UFC, what am I talking about, ESPN, actually started, you know, reporting on their scores and stuff. And, you know, then they actually started covering arena football now. They actually show live arena football games. So it's kind of like now, you know, it kind of blew up there for a little bit, and they had a video game. And I don't know. I don't know how well the ratings have been doing for arena football. I don't think that great. But, you know, I mean, it kind of, like I said, it's just a good sign that your sport is really getting, you know, is coming on the map in the mainstream media, if ESPN's covering it, you know.
All right, man. This next story is kind of interesting. Basically, man, I'm not going to read all this. It's a, you know, a very long thing here. It's 2 pages. But basically, they're making a Matt Hamill movie, dude, called Hamill, about his life. What do you think about
that?
Wow.
I mean, it's kind of weird, I guess. I don't know that he's done so much that.
Here's the thing, dude.
He's movie worthy. I don't know.
Well, what are you talking about, dude? Obviously, the story there of a death athlete, dude, rising up, man, and you know being, you know, very successful and stuff like that, man.
Well, also, that's the thing. How successful has he really been?
Well, why are you trying to bust the man's balls here, dude?
I'm
he
just
did
saying
very
that.
Well on the show. I mean, he beat Michael Bisping. A lot of people, you know, think he got totally robbed in that decision, and then he come back and he beat Tim Bosch, man. I mean, the guy's obviously improving. He's going to be a damn good fighter, I think.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, it's just like, I don't know. I don't know how much people are going to really, you know, relate to this guy's life. I mean, I don't know that much about him, I suppose.
There's some controversy within the deaf community, dude, that
maybe he's not deaf enough.
They cast a... No. Why are you stupid, man?
I just thought maybe, like he can actually hear a little bit.
That's retarded here. Let me just finish this. I don't even know what you're talking... You know, obviously, you don't even know what you're talking about, man. The controversy within the deaf community, dude, is them casting a non-deaf actor to play the role in the film, dude. Hey, I probably know a good guy to play Matt Hamill in the film.
Mm, Matt Hamill.
Yeah, okay. What's wrong with Matt Hamill playing the role of Matt Hamill, man?
I don't know. You think he could really pull it off? I mean, I don't know.
That's
I
so
don't,
stupid
he doesn't
when
look,
people say he wouldn't know how
to
act,
me.
Man. Yes, I don't know how to act the role of myself. That's fucking retarded.
Yeah, well, they gotta play it up, though, and dramatize it and stuff, and make it, you know.
Like, dude, like, there was, like, some kind of MC Hammer movie or something. Or maybe it was just
like,
a joke, dude.
Like, I'm sure
they
Matt Hamill,
someone
dude.
Was gonna play Hammer in the movie, man. Why couldn't they get the original Hammer to play himself?
Well, it's like, he probably doesn't look like the MC Hammer they want, man. He's probably, like, real fat and stuff now. But, here's the thing, though. See, like, in the movie version, Matt Hamill, dude, like, he'll probably, you know, it'll be like all like Hollywood dramatized, man. It'll be like Daredevil, like he lost his hearing and, you know, some sort of a freak accident, and now he's got like heightened senses and like he fights off ninjas and stuff, and it's going to be like a big, you know, big budget superhero movie.
Dude, let's go ahead and move on, dude, to the next story. And of course, is again, dude, that heated war of words, dude. Pen Shirk, okay. So now Sean Shirk is blasted back with several comments here, dude, that I actually find quite funny. Here's on Shirk on BJ Penn's Will to Fight. BJ, I've seen him broken in the second fight with Matt Hughes when he was caught on his back and eating those punches and elbows. He was just flopping around like a fat fish out of water. That guy, that was a guy that didn't want to fight anymore. I've seen it in a couple of fights where if the fight is not going his way, he just kind of says, fuck it, I don't really care. You can see it in someone's face. Shark on Penn's trash talk. He's not really fooling anyone with his talk. Maybe that's what he uses to motivate himself, but I'm not going to quit. He could be punching my face, and I'll come back and get back at him. I've been in so many wars. Look at how many back and forth fights I've had in, I've been in, and I've never given in. I actually compete better if I don't like somebody. It tends to motivate me more. Wow, what do you think there, dude, about the with those jabs, man, by Sean Shirk?
I mean, what is this news? You know that they're talking shit to each other. I mean, obviously, I think it's
newsworthy. Basically, saying that BJ Penn, dude, if you just beat him up a little bit, he'll just quit out there, man. You don't think that's newsworthy?
I think that
questioning the man's heart.
That's just trash talk, man. It's just trash talk, man. It's all it is, dude. They clearly don't like each other. I mean, it's going to be a hell of a fight. I don't think BJ Penn just quits on fights and stuff.
Let me ask you this, dude. Will BJ Penn, if he gets a choke hold on, will he not release it a la Jens Holger, man? Will he hold that choke on a little longer?
I doubt that, no. I mean,
would you be sickened if that happened?
You gotta be professional, you know.
Oh, okay, then why did he let go of Jens Pulver then, man?
I don't think they had to like bring out security to rip him off Jens Pulver. I don't remember that.
It wasn't like that, dude. But I mean, like,
it's not like they were just like.
Then the ref was
like,
"No, this is what happened, man." I actually watched the fight, dude. Okay, he's tapping out. The ref's like, "Hey, let go." He doesn't let go at first. Then he's like, he grabs his arms. He's like, "Hey, let go." Kind of tugs on him. Then he lets go of it, man.
Oh. I thought it was like a, you know, pro wrestling situation where he just wouldn't let go and they just kept ringing the bell, dude, ding, 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 ding. And then, like, they had to bring out, like, a team of fucking UFC refs to start pulling them apart.
Nah.
They reversed
it, dude,
and disqualified him.
That shows, I mean, that fight's definitely going to be huge, man. And just the whole trash talk leading into that's pretty epic. And I think the last news story we got here for you is, of course, Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira and Frank Mir to coach the Ultimate Fighter 8, man. What do you think about that, dude?
It's interesting. I mean, what about Big Nog, though? I mean, he's not too good on the English. How exactly is that going to work?
Actually, he speaks English pretty decent, man. I mean, he's not the best in the world, but it's definitely passable. But the show is going to be taped here. It's going to be begin taping next week and will air in September until early December, building towards a championship match between the coaches on the New Year's Eve weekend card, dude.
Isn't that a long, long time, though, to not have a heavyweight fight, you know, heavyweight title fight?
Yeah, I mean, that's always the thing that kind of sucks about stuff like that, so, yeah.
I don't know.
Who would you like in a fight, dude, between those two?
Well, I think you got to give the edge to Minotauro. He's clearly the best fighter.
Does his jiu-jitsu, is it better than Frank Mir's, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think his jiu-jitsu's better. I think his conditioning's far better. I think Frank Mir's a good fighter. I'm not going to say he doesn't have a chance. But just Antonio Nogueira, I think, in my opinion, is clearly the best fighter in the UFC in the heavyweight division. Perhaps one of the best fighters in the world, you know, ranked, you know, second only to Fedor. And then again, like I said, I don't know about Fedor. I want to see this guy. I want to see Fedor fight someone. When Fedor beats Tim Sylvia, then I'll say that he's, without a doubt, the number one fighter in the world, heavyweight
well,
in the world.
Well,
you know?
Clearly, dude, the man is it. The man has beat down a lot of guys in pride, man. I mean, you know, I guess a lot of people question just if he's number one ranked in the world. Not on his skill, because I think it's pretty apparent the man's very skilled, but just the fact that he hasn't fought anyone in so long.
Yeah.
Hang on to that.
You know, being number one ranked, that's not like number one of all time or anything. It's like number one right now, you know. People, you know, they come and go, you know. People, you know, lose it as they get older. You know, their skill diminishes and their talents diminish. Unless, you know, a guy like Randy Couture, who's this, seems to somehow defy, you know, the aging process. But, you know, most people, they get worse as they get older. And he hasn't really been tested in a while. So how do we know he still is the man that we all know he used to be, you know?
Yeah. But,
back to this whole fight, you know, I think it's interesting. It's probably one of the best heavyweight fights they can put together right now in a weak UFC division. It'll be interesting to see what kind of contenders and other stuff develop during this hiatus. You know, there's some interesting heavyweight contenders on the way up. Obviously, I want to see Brock Lesnar, what he does against Mark Coleman. I want to see, you know, what... a guy like Heath Herring, maybe where he goes next. Also, I'm hearing a lot of good things about a young guy named Cain Velasquez, who's supposedly a really good up-and-coming fighter. So we'll see where all those guys go and what pans out in this heavyweight division.
Yeah, but that's enough talk about the news. Let's move on right along here. Let's go ahead and talk about, of course, Dream 3, and this is the first Dream that has been telecast live on HDNet, although it started, I think, at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I doubt many people actually watched it live. They probably catch the replay that was on the next day. But,
I mean, I think it's good to have these on live, because there are certain people who are hardcore enough that they want to see it live. So I think that's good that they did show it live, but then again, obviously, I'd say a lot of people just catch
the
replay.
One complaint I have about this live card, dude, because we did watch the live telecast here.
Very unedited.
They tend to waste a lot of time over there, man, okay? this is just like other ones. I mean, they're showing video packages and stuff, okay? But they don't show that on HDNet. You don't even see the video. You just see their arena, and they're talking, you know... And, you know, Kenny Rice is not that interesting, so, you know, the conversation he's trying to have with Boss Rutten, you know, is not very, you know, stimulating and all that. So, definitely, that got kind of a little annoying, but, you know, whatever. Just as long as I can see the fights, you know, I can live with that kind of stuff.
There was a couple video packages, mostly for guys that are, like, American fighters and stuff like that, you know.
It's the ones they made themselves, HDK, not the...
Like Jason Mayhem Miller, they had one for him, and one for guys like that other guy. I forget now who all they did have one for. I remember Jason Miller and stuff, they had one.
Yeah, but anyway, let's go ahead and talk about the fight card here. They opened up the show with a featherweight matchup, Soji Maruyama versus Takeshi Yamasaki. This fight was, you know, it was okay. It was basically kind of the, you know, a tale of two different styles going here. Moriyama definitely landed the more, you know, crisp, damaging blows, but he really didn't do a lot of that because Yamasaki just repeatedly took him down. I mean, he'd take him down, they'd get back up, and he'd just take him down again. I mean, and, you know, that just lasted through the entire fight, and, you know, he ended up winning the decision because of that. You know, not terribly exciting, but, you know, I guess it's damn effective, man.
Wasn't at all the most exciting or memorable fight, certainly.
Now let's talk about this second fight now here. Of course, is the American Jason Mayhem Miller against Katsuri Shibata. Dude, number one, of course, we need to tell this is actually a first-round match of the middleweight tournament, so the winner of this would advance on the tournament. Complete mismatch, dude. I mean, this was just a sick...
Did they, like, replace that Gracie fight when there's supposed to be some Gracie taking on someone? They replaced that with this fight?
Probably. I mean, I don't know all the workings, ins and outs of it. All I know is just, it was just a, you know, a match. And I remember there being a Gracie match, but we've never seen it yet. That was a horrible mismatch, dude. Jason Miller... and I want to ask you, dude, what do you think about the mocking, you know, comedy routine that Miller did here, dude? Did was that very disrespectful to Shibata?
You know, that's his gimmick, you know, that he does crazy stuff, and he, you know, was taunting. He was clearly, just like I said, it was such a mismatch. It was sad, you know. Once he got him down, there was nothing he could do to get up, or he just got pinned down. It was actually wasn't even that very... It wasn't even a really exciting fight. It wasn't any kind of spectacular ending to it. He did enough to just turtle himself up and keep from being knocked out or submitted. But finally, they got the TKO. But it's a little disrespectful, I suppose. You know, I'm not a big fan of guys that want to, you know, I mean, just take it serious. I guess it's okay to have a little personality and character. It certainly gets your name out there and gets you marketed and, something to talk about. I think the one thing to cut some kind of funny interview after the fight's over or whatever, but when you're trying to, like, make your opponent look like a fool, that's more just kind of disrespectful, I think. But, you know, yeah, that's my opinion.
So, of course, we didn't say this, but at the 6:57 mark of the first round, Mayhem gets the TKO victory, so he advances. Now,
I want to add this. So, I will say that in a way, though, it's almost disrespectful to mixed martial arts in general that these guys with really no true MMA experience are even, you know, trying to fight.
That guy's like a pro wrestler, dude.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this. You get these guys that are just pro wrestlers, or they're like guys that are like, you know. I don't even know, like a guy like Aki Bono or something when he made his MMA debut, obviously with no real martial arts background other than him being a former, you know, sumo champion, but that's not going to help you in a mixed martial arts fight.
You know, well, technically, I guess that is a form of martial art, man, but...
I guess, yeah.
Sumo only works against other fat guys, man. That's not even martial arts we're dealing with, you know, morbidly obese people, man.
Well, see, the thing is, though, from what I understand, the sumo, man, was invented to be a defense against, like, ninjas and stuff, man, like in ancient China or something, in Japan and everything. Japan,
what the fuck? Where'd you read this, man?
No, this is serious, man. Look it up. I don't think
a big
read
fat
it.
Guy have anything to do. Well, how could he stop a ninja thing, dude, pull out like, a sword or something, dude?
It was like, I guess, like nerve holds and like certain other things, kicks and stuff. Like the sumos were supposed to be so large and so massive that the punches and kicks, man, couldn't knock them over, you know. And the fat was, I mean, this is the truth.
They
I'm not even making this up.
Those nerve
it was like armor, dude.
Fat, man.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't like lock a nerve hold in on
no,
on the. Like, you couldn't get
what
your hand around
this,
their nerve,
dude?
You know, their arm or something, dude. I swear, dude, it was like they were. It, the sumo kind of originated.
Yeah,
this
lesson in here, man, on the change of Chinese martial arts here, man, or
While you go on here with the card, man, I'll get on here and look it up to make sure I'm not just spouting off a bunch of bullshit. But what this has to do with MMA, really, is it doesn't really have anything to do with MMA, but I'm telling you, though, it was invented originally to countermeasure, like, you know, the yeah. ninjas and stuff, man. Sumos were sumo wrestlers.
Wow, while very comical, I'm not sure if that's true. But anyway, like you said,
it's kind of like that game. See, we're like playing this game right now, Boulder Dash. You know that game where
was
you
it
had
like
to like
rock paper scissors, man.
Huh?
What the hell's Boulder Dash? I'm not even
okay.
Know what that is,
you're thinking about Rochambeau, man. Okay.
Yeah.
Boulder Dash is some game where it's like you're given a word and you try to you just make up what you think that it means or whatever. And I don't know somebody. If you get somebody to believe it and it's right, then you score a point. Or if they don't, I don't know, something like that.
All right. Whoa. I just got a rope and rang in this tangent, dude. Let's go ahead and talk about
the card.
Yeah,
you
got
to get us back on topic.
All right, man. The next fight up, the fight was Don Juan Kim versus Melvin Manhoff, man. And
Manhoof, I like to call him.
I think, yeah, whatever. Some weird Dutch name. And dude, Melvin Manhoof.
Physical what? Specimen, pretty much.
Well, other than that, man, I was just going to say that this guy's a legit fucking, you know, kickboxer, man. He has a very extensive background in kickboxing, a lot of wins, you know. I mean, that was clearly his strong suit. You know, it's always been, you know, questioned what his ground game was like, man. I think it got shown in this fight that it isn't that great. Basically, Kim gets him down, and I was very worried. I was like, whoa, what the hell? Is this Manhoff going to get beaten here? I mean, he got mounted. I mean, he was getting pounded on here, but he actually manages to reverse it and get side control, and then he lands this brutal knee shot, and then scores a couple hammer fists. And the referee has to stop in there and call into the fight. 408 is when the TKO victory comes in this one for Melvin Manhoff.
Mm-hmm. Melvin Manhoof, of course. Yeah, I am looking into it here, man. But yeah, Melvin Manhoof, he looked impressive, man. He looked just totally outclassed his opponent. But I'll give Daewon Kim, man, some credit, dude. He was banging with him for a while, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a fairly exciting fight.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the next fight up, of course. It was a lightweight contest. Ufal Camp lightweight Daisuke Nakamura against 2000 Olympic judo silver medalist, former judo world champion, I think, and something else. I think he might have competed in the Pan Am Games or something. But anyway, judo expert Byung Kyung Jung from Korea. Byung Kyung Jung, yeah, I think that's how you say that. Dude, this is crazy in the first round. These guys are just exchanging like multiple submission attempts. I think Nakamura got a couple of, slick judo takedowns. I think Jung got caught in an armbar and almost fucking tapped out, but he is managed to escape it. And that lasted all the way through the first round, so it goes into the second round. But in the second round, basically, Nakamura just eventually gets him down and just starts landing some strikes. And he, again, another TKO, 119 in the second round. So, you know, this is definitely a very exciting fight, though. In that first round, these guys were just going insane with the submission attempts and all that stuff. And I was telling, when I was watching it, I was talking to my brother, I was just saying, this is very, while there's not a lot of banging, quote-unquote banging going on, just the submission attempts and the whole ground game was very exciting. So that's a good example of how you know, a very technical ground fight can be, you know, just as exciting as a stand-up war.
Yeah.
That's your input, man? Just yeah? You still researching that topic, man?
I'm just like, yeah, I'm trying to find some support to back up my claims here a little bit about the sumo. But about this match, I guess I could give my input a little bit into it. It was an exciting ground fight, you know, and there was some some good groundwork going on, some submissions, you know, some back and forth getting out of submissions. Nakamura had a toe hold towards the end of the first round. He went for a standing Kimura transition into an armbar. That was pretty slick. So, yeah, there was some good submission work going on in this fight. Of course, it ended with a TKO, but it was a pretty technical fight that was also fairly entertaining, too, as well.
Let's talk about the next fight here. This is the welterweight eliminator for the welterweight title shot that's going to happen at a later Dream event. Of course, we have the often controversial, often hound, you know, the weed, Nick Diaz taking on Katsuya Inoue. I don't know how to say that guy's name, but whatever. This was a very surprising fight to me, man. You know, Dick Diaz coming in with a greasy jiu-jitsu background. Yeah, you know, I really didn't think these guys were going to stand here and bang it out, and that's exactly what they did. It wasn't like it was very technical either, dude. It was an entire slugfest. I mean, they were just in there banging. Dick Diaz would not try to. There was no movement. There was no, you know, throw some combinations and move out. He was just standing there eating shots and throwing them right back. And it started to look towards about the midway point of this first round. These two guys were gassing because their punches started looking kind of slow and all that stuff. But then Nick Diaz kind of seems like he catches a second wind. He starts really pouring it on. I'm probably totally butchering that guy's name, but I'll just claim the Japanese fighter in this match. Starts to look like he really got tagged. I mean, he looks out on his feet. The announcers are talking about they can't even see how he's actually still standing. I mean, he's just eating shot after shot. He looks like he's going down any second. Then all of a sudden you see this white towel being lobbed into the ring. And, of course, that's Inoue's corner throwing in the towel. So Nick Diaz wins this at the 6:45 mark. Marked by corner stoppage.
Kind of interesting, you know. I was surprised that Diaz, you know, obviously has a good jiu-jitsu game, didn't look to go to that more than what he did. I mean, he basically just stood and banged with him for the entire fight, and he was able to pick up the win, but, I just didn't see this as really being the game plan for Diaz. But, you know, I guess what can you say? If it works, it works, you know? Mm-hmm.
All right, we're talking about the next fight up, of course. This has one of the favorites, you know, one of the quote-unquote favorites in this lightweight tournament, of course. Luis Firmino versus the aforementioned favorite, Tosuke Kilojari. And, again, this fight, you know, was pretty decent fight. He goes the distance with, of course, Kilojari picking up the unanimous victory, and he just to kind of sum it up, he basically just, you know, he really controlled all the rounds. He did more. He took his fighter down. He just really controlled him on the ground, you know, did some decent ground and pound. Then he looked, you know, nothing spectacular on his feet, but definitely, you know, you really thought that he was winning that also. So, you know, fairly impressive showing for Kilojari, and he advances.
Yeah, not a whole lot to say about this fight. I mean, it wasn't, again, the most exciting fight, but I thought Kilojari definitely did enough, you know, to win this round, you know, and not the round, win the whole fight, you know. And the judges agreed it was a unanimous decision victory for Kiljari.
All right, now we're moving
next
on.
Fight. Yeah, yeah, we're to the fight of the night right here.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yep. I think no one, and this would obviously be a candidate for fight of the year, man. You could throw him in there with those early candidates with Shamrock, Kung Lee. Of course, we're talking about Eddie Alvarez versus Joachim Hansen. Wow, dude, this is a total slugfest. These guys banged it out for two rounds. Of course, that's actually 15 minutes. They only have two rounds here because of the first round's 10 minutes. Total slugfest. I mean, in that first round, dude, Alvarez drops Hansen, I think, two times with huge shots. I'm surprised he didn't knock him out. This shows you just how fucking tough this Hansen guy is. I'll tell you what, Hansen, though, dude, landed some pretty stiff up kicks at a couple of points there. He really tagged Alvarez, and he has those very long legs, so that definitely paid off for him there. In the second round, Alvarez almost gets called, dude, in an arm bar. It's kind of like a weird thing. He was in the butterfly guard of Hansen. He pushes him up in the air and kind of flips him over, and he lands with his arm in there, and he almost gets tapped out, but he kind of rolls out of that, spins out, and he's starting to look gassed at the end of this fight, but he was just still kept pouring it on. I think right at the 30-second mark, he lands a couple big shots and a high kick that still doesn't knock Hansen out, so we have to go to the judges' scorecards. Alvarez wins by unanimous decision. Just a pure out 15-minute war from these two.
Yeah, this is one of the best fights I've seen all year. One of the best fights I've ever seen. Just total like credit to both fighters. Eddie Alvarez really brought it. Joachim Hansen, if I was going to score it round by round, I would say he took the second round. Obviously, the first round being 10 minutes, the second round only being five. And Eddie Alvarez, I thought, took the first round. Clearly, I think he would therefore take the fight, and he did by unanimous decision. But don't let that fool you. I mean, don't let the fact that it was a unanimous decision fool you into thinking it wasn't a great fight, because both of these guys, I mean, it could have went either way, because Hansen just took some tremendous punishment, and he started dealing out some pretty good punishment late in the fight, too, as well. And, you know, he... almost had an armbar. He was so close. He switched from a Kimura he had in half guard, transitioned into an armbar that, I mean, he could have beat him with it. Alvarez, though, did tremendous. I don't even know what you would call it. But it was just an unbelievable escape to get out of that. So despite, you know, Eddie Alvarez picking up the unanimous decision, it was still a very close fight. He gave props to Hansen. You know, Hansen said that that fight with Eddie Alvarez, that he was the toughest guy he's ever fought. And, you know, it was, you know, I would have loved to have seen it go, you know, another round. But obviously, you know, that's not how it's going to go. These two, you know, both... solid fighters. Hansen, you know, kind of a veteran. Eddie Alvarez, a younger guy, really up and coming. And I think Pro Elite's got a real star on their hands with Eddie Alvarez. This guy, you know, right now, I'm going to say that he's probably my favorite maybe to take this whole tournament. Obviously, there's still some good guys left. Shinya Aoki, you know, you got, we'll talk about Carlos Ono, who, really kind of reemerged towards the end, you know, in the last fight, and obviously Kajiri as well. But I don't know. My pick right now, the guy who not only I'd like to see win it, but who I think has got a really good chance to win it, is Eddie Alvarez. He really impressed me with this fight.
Let's go ahead and move on to the last fight that was on Dream here. Of course, we got Mishiro Ishida. And a lot of people coming into this tournament actually thought he may be the favorite in this. He had a very impressive victory over Marcus Aurelio. He beat Gilbert Melendez. He's the only person to beat Gilbert Melendez again. Huge victories over those guys. You know, a lot of people thought this was a top talent. And he was facing Cal Uno, who, while a great fighter, you know, had really seen a decline a little bit in his career. He hadn't fought, you know, in a while. But just like Shane said, this guy looks like he totally resurrected his career, maybe with this victory. And that's right, he did beat him by a rear naked choke, 138 in the second round. It was just amazing. In that first round, you know, he definitely was going Ishida's way. He seemed to be fairly confident. He seemed to, you know, he got Uno down and, you know, was doing very well. But then the second round, it just seemed kind of like a freak thing. I mean, you know, there wasn't really anything going on much. But, bam, there's a scramble. Uno just, you know, freakishly fast just jumps around his back and sinks that arm in for the choke. He doesn't even have the hooks in. I mean, it's so fast, and he just chokes him out. It was a very surprising victory.
Yeah, definitely, no doubt. Cal Uno, impressive. You know, he had kind of, I mean, he's a guy, just looking here at some of the fights that he had had in the past. I mean, he was a former UFC fighter. Kind of had a rough road in the UFC. He had losses to Jens Pulver, BJ Penn. He beat guys like Den Thomas and Yves Edwards. But he also lost to Hermes Franca as well in his last UFC fight. He was able to find BJ Penn to a draw at UFC 41, which is a 5-round draw. So that was actually probably one of the highlights of his career. Some other fights, I mean, he's recently fought guys like J.C. Cavalcanti, who beat him by majority decision. But, yeah, he's a guy that, you know, had fought some big-name guys, hadn't really beat a lot of big-name guys, but had been around for a while, been around. I mean, his first, you know, first professional fight for Shooto was in 1996, so this guy's been around the block a few times. But, you know, pulled off a big, no doubt, upset win, and perhaps maybe this is his time to take the spotlight, you know, and pull off a big upset run here in the Dream Tournament.
So, man up moment of the night for this night. I'm pretty sure that you're going to be in agreement that it goes to Alvarez and Hansen for this, that, you know, that 15-minute war they put on, man.
Yeah, no doubt. It's what, like I said, I mean, it's just one of the best fights we've seen all year. Definitely the fight of the night. And, you know, if you're going to, you know, if you didn't, or, you know, watch this on ACNet, if you catch a replay just to see this fight, hell, if you're just going to go on YouTube or Daily Motion, look up, you know, Joseem Hansen versus Eddie Alvarez. Terrific fight. You need to watch it because it was something special, I think.
What are your, like, kind of overall impressions of this Dream here, dude? Did you enjoy this card?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a good card. There was a lot of good fights on it. I mean, a lot of you know, a lot of exciting stoppages. I mean, Ishida versus Cal Uno was an exciting fight as well. You know, Alvarez Hansen was exciting. I like the Diaz versus Inoue fight, was pretty good. Melvin Manhoof, Daewon Kim, I mean, that was another stoppage. The Nakamura Jung fight, another stoppage. Jason Mayhem Miller put on his, you know, his top of show. So it was an interesting card to watch, no doubt. The lightweight tournament is something to watch out for because there is some legitimate guys in this tournament. And it's fun to watch, you know.
And quickly, before we move on here, man, if Alvarez was to actually win this tournament, you think he's a top 10, top 5 ranked fighter?
Well, no doubt. I think if anybody, whoever wins this tournament, should be like.
But here's the thing, man. I mean, let's look at it this way. Do you really? How would you rank him against some guys that are in the UFC? I mean, would you pick him to beat a, I don't know, let's see who, like a Kenny Florian or a Roger Huerta?
Absolutely.
Or a, wow, you would pick him
I
to
would,
beat Kenny
yeah.
Florian? What about, and a Roger Huerta? What
yeah,
about
I mean, if he goes all the way, yeah, no
a
doubt.
Quake, Guida, Tyson Griffin, you know, guys like that. What about a BJ Penn, dude? Okay, the Sean Shirk. I mean, you
well,
think
I mean,
he's
maybe not.
Level?
I mean, you got guys like Shirk, Penn. Those are like the upper echelon elite fighters. But you know, guys like Kenny Florian, who's a good fighter, but I don't think he's that, you know, untouchable that he couldn't get beat by Eddie Alvarez.
What about your boy, you know? Clay Guida, man? You like to talk him up.
Well, Clay's an exciting fighter to watch, but not top 10 material, at least not yet, anyway.
Yeah. Although I'm sure you would say if Alvarez, Clay Guida, dude, fight would just be a pure war, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, anyway, let's move on. Let's quickly touch on The Ultimate Fighter before we wrap this up. There was two fights on this episode, just like there was last episode. So the first fight, Team Rampage actually has control for the first time this season. And he chooses a wrestler, Gerald Harris, to take on Team Forest member Amir Sadallah. God damn it. This guy's name.
Well, Amir, let's call him that.
Yeah, to take on Amir. God, man, these guys, these weird Arabic last names, I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Anyway, and Rampage, you know, says it's basically a classic wrestler versus a kickboxer, which, you know, should seem pretty good matchup for a wrestler, dude. So let's talk about the fight. Basically, it looked like a great pick early on. This Harris kid was slamming Amir all over the place. He slammed him several times. He was just really, you know, although his ground and pound didn't look very impressive, he was trying to do that. But he's just in general, his slams very impressive. Second round comes out, there's not much to say. He got caught. You know, it happens. He eats a knee, goes down, and he turtles up, and they have to stop it, man. I mean, you know, he's upset afterwards, but hey, you know, if you're not out, then you got to do something. You just can't lay there. You just can't, you know, turtle up and take a break while some guy's, you know, trying to rain punches in there. The referee's telling you to improve your position. You got to do that.
Yeah. I mean, this is no doubt like a sickening kind of fight for to see take place, because clearly Amir was getting, you know, just ragdolled and thrown all over the place and getting beat down. But when he finally was able to get back to his feet, I mean, he just landed a shot. I guess you give him credit for never giving up and always continuing to get out there and swing and stuff. But, I mean, I don't see this guy having much of a future of winning this, you know, Ultimate Fighter. He's got maybe some potential if he actually trains on his ground game, but his professional record's 0-0. I mean, he's just a kickboxer that has no idea what he was doing on the ground. He got lucky that he was able to get up, landed a good shot. And I won't say it was a lucky shot. I mean, he's probably a pretty gifted striker. I mean, at least, adequate enough. But he's not winning anything, I don't think. So, you know, good for him. It was a big upset. It was kind of fun to watch, I guess. I mean, from that underdog's perspective. But also, I mean, I'm sure if you were a fan of what'd you say his name was? I'm not looking. I don't have that here in front of me.
Gerald Harris,
yeah. I mean, if you're rooting for Harris, it has to be very frustrating because he was just dominating this entire fight, basically.
Let me ask you this, dude. Does it seem like this season, dude, like none of these guys are memorable? None of these guys, they haven't done anything to make you
pretty much
say, hey,
yeah.
I like them. I mean, they seem just like faces, man. You know, it's just like not other seasons where you liked a guy or you didn't like a guy. I could say I basically don't care about any of them. It's just, you know, a fighter.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's very true. None of them, I can't really remember hardly any. At least not yet. I mean, maybe somebody's going to emerge and, you know, become a real front runner. But I think just the talent pool's getting weaker, and each time they do this, I mean, you see a lot of the records on some of these guys that have not exactly the most impressive records and resumes coming in. Unlike, you know, I mean, the guys from, like, the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, almost all those guys went on to fight in the UFC later on. A lot of those guys are still fighting in the UFC. You know, I don't see that happening necessarily from the season.
All right, let's talk about the second fight that happens. Team Forest is back in control. He takes his boy, Cal Yarbrough, and he picks Team Rampage member Patrick Schultz. Of course, we all know that Schultz was the one.
Yeah, he was the one that they had gotten beaten and then had to fill in for the guy that had that herb on his neck, and as Rampage would say. But does this season, I mean, maybe it's always been like this, because I haven't really watched the last couple seasons. I kind of lost interest, really, in watching the show. But it seems to me like half the fighters, man, when they lose, they're just like, man, my life's over, dude. I put everything on winning this. Like, I mean, what kind of way is that to plan for your future? I'm going to put everything I've got on winning this Ultimate Fighter, and if I lose, then, I mean, I just, my life's over, you know? I mean, that's not probably a sound strategy for you to bank everything you've got on winning.
Well, a lot of these guys quit, you know, what fucking nickel and dime job they had to come out here and do that, man. So, I don't know. But, you know, anyway, let's talk about this fight. This is basically a kickboxing match with a couple takedowns. Schultz. And they even said that Ted Forrest, you know, Cal Yarbrough, he said, you know, he just wants to have a kickboxing match with someone. So he picked Schultz, who, you know, that's all he's known for.
Schultz. Schultz is my anti-guy. There's something about this guy I just do not like. I don't like the way he looks. I don't like the way he talks. I don't like his attitude. I just don't like nothing about this guy, man.
Yeah. He's doing pretty good in the first round, but And look, let's put it this way. He's doing okay, and then he gasses. Yarbrough takes him down. He gets two takedowns before the round's over. So, you know, a lot of people could argue that Schultz won the first round.
He got taken down, he got pounded, too, and he didn't do any – he had basically no offense. I think you could make an argument maybe that was a 10-8 round. You know, I don't know whether the judge scored it, but it's possible.
Round?
The second round is what I meant to say.
Well, I'm talking about the first round. He got taken down twice.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, he did get taken down the first round, too, but
he gets taken down and beat up for the entire round, basically. So, and then after it's over, of course, Rampage, they get into this weird thing. I don't know why Forrest is like, he's like, yeah, we'll fight a third round. And, you know, Rampage is like, yeah, let's do this. He's like, you know, my boy won that first round and stuff.
Yeah.
And then they announced, you know, the unanimous decision for Yarbrough. What about that Schultz? Is this a part you don't like where he's like, you know, he looks over that force, like, hey, I want you to shut up. Said, I can't wait to see you fight Quentin or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, like I said, no respect from this guy. You know, don't talk shit when you just got your ass kicked, okay? You don't deserve to be talking any shit to anybody, pretty much. That's what I would tell that guy. You know, he went out there, got his ass kicked, and, you know, I mean, if this was, you know, the way the Dream, fights are being scored, where the fight is judged on the whole and not, you know, on a round-by-round scoring system, then I would totally agree with that decision, you know, because I think that second round was so dominant that even if Cal Yarbrough lost the first round, I mean, he didn't lose it by much, whereas that second round, like I said, he totally dominated. So, I mean, it doesn't really bother me that bad. I guess, technically speaking, it probably was a questionable decision, but, you know, what can you say? You know, I don't think the guy really deserves to win anyway, so, and I think if he'd have won a third round, he'd have probably just got beat again, but, you know, whatever. I don't think he needs to be running his mouth on a guy like Forrest Griffin, who clearly could just destroy him.
What about, after this fight, dude, of course, Rampage's outburst, where he, you know, storms off, and before he does that, he turns around and, you know, yells out, I can't wait. Or as she goes, I bet our fight doesn't go to no decision. It says here, dude, you can tell Forrest, dude, was was just shocked by the the unsportsmanship, the poor sportsmanship that was shown here by Schultz and Rampage, and it looks like he's pretty steamed up about it, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, it was very disrespectful as well from Rampage to, why is he getting mad at Forrest for it? I don't get that. I don't understand how it's Forrest Griffin's fault. He's not a judge. You know, of course he's going to think he's got won because he did win. He was beating his ass. You know, he would have won that fight. He had got the most offense in, and he looked the best. And what's he going to say? Oh, you know, that's fine, you know. I don't care that, I'm not going to try to support my guy. Of course he's not going to say that, you know, he's going to stick up for his guy. He's going to say he's won and all that kind of stuff. I don't know why Rampage is getting mad at him for. Doesn't make any sense. Pick a better team next time. Don't pick a bunch of bums that are going to get beat, you know. He's only won one fight so far. It's embarrassing.
What do you think about the previews, dude, for the next episode? Really showed, like, I think Forrest, like, fucking shooting some kind of net gun at Quentin, dude, and wrapping him up in it, man.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they act like it's, you know, all-out war. That didn't seem to me like they were too pissed at each other. It was kind of more like,
although it does,
jokingly.
Like, the first thing they show was, like, Forrest, like, screaming top of his lungs and, like, ripping his shirt.
I don't know.
He's going Hogan there, dude, in the dressing room, so...
I don't know why he was hawking out for, you know.
Yeah. But anyway,
I guess disrespecting, him is, he just can't take it, I guess, you know.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I mean, that wraps up us talking about the Ultimate Fighter. So, let's go ahead and put the finishing touches on another edition of the podcast here. As always, I'm just going to plug a few things here. Of course, MMAManUp.com, that's your hub for just everything about the podcast. Head over there, check it out. You'll find a link to iTunes there. If you're not getting this podcast through iTunes, please do so. And, that'd be much appreciated. And, of course, send us some feedback to the ManUp inbox, MMAManUp@gmail.com. It'd be nice to get some listener feedback. And you can go ahead and plug your stuff there, Shane.
Well, of course, it's ProWrestlingPodcast.com. If you're a fan of the pro wrestling, you can check that out. Also, if you're so inclined, check out our live podcast that Aston and I do for the Pro Wrestling Podcast. It's the website for that is blogtalkradio.com/. No gimmicks needed. That's the website you can go to this Saturday and basically every Saturday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. We do a live show on there. It's just like a live radio show streaming over the internet, and we take live calls and have a chat room and all kinds of good stuff. Talk about the pro wrestling, and maybe in the future sometime we might actually do that for MMA. I don't know,
Yeah, definitely. I've been thinking about something like that, so we might do that. And until next time, we'll be coming at you with a review of the IFL and our preview for UFC 84. But until then, thank you for downloading and thank you for listening.
See ya.